a break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and today we have an outtake topic from last week's episode with Karen Slater. We join in as Dre checks in with Karen's alien concerns.
Last thing we were planning on doing, a little more place setting, and I'm sure, Karen, you got to hear a lot about this, all of the different alien species. Did you have much interest or concern? This episode shows a lot of them.
I think there's more than what we saw in the episode, or else I just only paid attention to the ones that were specific to this episode. I got really confused. I do not know names. The guy who's the shadow.
Morden. He's the human representative of the shadows, yeah.
Okay, I thought he was with the Raiders. Was he not with the Raiders?
No, I don't think so, but that I was also confused, and I am waiting to get Dre's explanation of what the hell was going on with the whole Raider
plot. Very confused, and I think two of them look alike, and one has short hair and one has long hair, and I didn't realize that they were different. And I'm going to blame the lighting, because the lighting was very shady for some of that show.
Yeah, to briefly, we can talk. Actually, that's a fun one. We can talk. This episode is actually the first appearance of an alien race called the Shadows. And this is kind of nice. I'm getting a little bit of an echo just in a while. But first episode of the Shadows, an alien race that's powerful. And that is established this episode, which is good. Using something, I'm not going to spoil it ahead of time, Mike. We'll bring it up. But JMS uses a very... Once Mike revealed this technique, I'm kind of sad because it's like revealing a magician's secret. Now I can't unsee it. But JMS, the writer of the show, listen to last episode, we talk him a lot, has a very non-subtle technique of showing that a character or alien race is powerful. And the Shadows use it this episode. We'll get to that. So we have the introduction of the Shadows. At this point, we don't know much except they are represented by a human, Mr. Morden. And to your question, Karen, I actually thought that was ambiguous because I could see Morden having specifically worked with the Marauders. We'll talk about that in a bit. And that is actually, to be a little spoilery, kind of his MO and the Shadows' MO is going, they will play sides against each other. So in terms of like headcanon, author canon, I would say it's completely open-ended and actually it's fine if it's not answered. We'll talk about that when we get to the end of the episode, because I had a question related to exactly that.
Sounds like we all have a lot of questions going on here for the Shadows.
So many questions.
We start off with a human representative of the Shadows and the Shadows. That's about all we know at this point in the show. We do have a fair number of humans, and I love all of your notes on them, Mike.
So how should we go through it? Why don't you give like a background of how the humans got here? Because I kept putting things down like the main points of it, in that it's set 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. They're kind of coming to peace after something mysterious happened at the end of that war where the Minbari surrendered, even though they were the overpowering force.
Yeah, I think let's start with humans and Minbari because they are the two major sub players. So we have the Shadows we already discussed. We'll have another race we'll discuss in a second that we know of this. We have the human and Minbari who have basically formed an alliance to make a space station. That's the premise of the show. If you haven't seen Babylon 5, that's all you need to know. Like humans in the future with an alien race in the future make this space station that's kind of a combination United Nations and spaceport. You know, you should put those two things together. Why not? It does make sense because it's probably expensive to put stuff in space. And JMS does make this a very lived-in universe. It's not as simple as Utopia. Everybody, the UN of the future, everybody gets along. It's like, how do we pay for it? This episode even has facts that the delegates on this station of various alien races aren't being entirely truthful. So we have a Earth and Minbari station in neutral space, and it is helmed by a bunch of essentially military personnel. So that is also another interesting fact. This is like a diplomatic place, but basically put on by EarthGov, which is like the Earth thing. And this is the exciting part of the episode, Karen. I'm aware.
I think it's funny they're held by a military thing, and I constantly was asking, where's the security?
Okay, well,
and I kept just saying it's because Garibaldi's in charge and he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, to be fair, in the back episode, we do get that he's a drunk that's asleep on the job. And we do know this, by the way, in our intros, we didn't discuss this much, but Karen, I believe you are a bigger Star Trek fan, which, you know, that is one of the biggest. You were talking Romeo and Juliet there. You got Mike as Babylon 5, Karen is Star Trek. Can two star-crossed lovers make it work? Maybe. But on both Star Trek and Babylon 5, you do have security has to be absolutely terrible or the episode is done. immediately. The episode we'll be talking soon hinges on a smuggling subplot, whatever. And like if security had been doing its job.
Yeah, it's like having to depower Superman or Captain Marvel or something and everything. You got to figure out where they're at hiding.
And we'll talk a fair number of the characters a bit. So I'll just actually label them really quick and try and do a one word explanation and ask Karen a question, if that's all right, Mike, which is we have Sinclair, who is our captain, commander in rank, captain of the station. He has a hole in his mind. He can't remember something that happened.
There's a hole. But he does in remember. His mind.
Okay, so we have Ivanova, second in command. She's an awesome character, but she's a little earlier in the show. Don't worry. There's a lot telepathy, but it doesn't come up this episode. Apparently, she can fly. Everybody flies. To your point, Karen, we do have Garibaldi, who is chief of security, like Sinclair, kind of a bounce around, not necessarily great. Wasn't really an actor, but kind of grew into the role, and that does kind of show. We have Dr. Franklin. He shows up very, very briefly in this episode. And we have Talia Winters, our resident telepath, and she did not show up in this episode.
I think you'd be amiss if you didn't mention Garibaldi's what am I going to do with my hands for the first two episodes. For the first three episodes, most of his scenes, he's holding his hands within his armpits. Like he just can't wait to take them out, skin the spell, and put them back in. 100%.
It's Molly Shannon, which is funny because Mike and I were talking about how he looks like Seth MacFarlane and
Dan Aykroyd. Seth MacFarlane from the front, Dan Aykroyd from the back. He's like a human.
I can't unsee it. People would say Bruce Willis because of the baldness and kind of the diehard look, but nope, you're right. You got it. Do I need to check that out? I've heard good. I heard he like tricked his way into basically making Star Trek by saying it was a parody first and just straight up did it.
It was glorious. I was using my sister's Hulu account and I was visiting, or I was at a work event, and they kicked me off because I was watching. I couldn't not watch it. And so I logged in Boston and they were like, somebody stole our password. I was like, it was me. It was me. I stole your password. Please give it back.
Now, so I do have one top level question. You were introduced to four of the five humans, and don't worry, I don't think you missed much on Talia unless we wanted to be really mean. Any opinions on any of the humans we met this episode?
I think the first thing I said to Mike, I had to pause the show because I was like, it was just completely eye-opening for me. And I don't know why I didn't think about it, because the same thing happens in Star Trek. She woke up early. Well, early or late, you can't really tell, it's space. And she went and took over for whatever.
Ivanova.
Okay. She woke up early. She's not a morning person. She goes down to the bridge and like everybody was there. So like, who is she? And nobody left. So who was she taking over for, and what kind of shifts there are, and why is the first and second commander on the deck at the same time? I was like, wait, but this isn't just a Babylon 5 problem. This is like a space show problem, because Star Trek does it as well. Everybody does it.
The first and second in command be taking over for each other? So someone's already there, as opposed to them together solving problems all the time.
So that one threw me. Garibaldi, that was Seth MacFarlane and Dan Aykroyd. That was it. I liked hearing the behind the scenes story about Sinclair from Mike.
And
that was
sad. Well, yeah. I think I'm actually just going to try and get through the other ones quick, because I really want to talk this show now. So we have the Minbari, who are one of the older races. They're called the Boneheads affectionately because they have a big bone around their head. And if you actually look closely, the way the prosthetics work, they actually have to have fake little tiny ears.
That's not why I call them Boneheads.
Oh, that's mean. Anyway, so the Minbari are one of the older races. Apparently they have, some of them have implants that are gray triangles that look like holes in their mind, right?
Does that come in a lot?
Only time it ever showed up.
Prominent. Yeah.
And we will talk it. Delenn is, we have learned this episode and it's said kind of two times, she is higher than she appears. She is an ambassador on the station, but she is really higher up, and there's something we don't know about her. And we've had several episodes where someone's been like, you are way higher up, why are you on the space station? That'll come up. We have Lanier, who is played by Bill Mumy from Lost in Space. Unfortunately, does not show up this episode. I do absolutely love it. We, of course, get into Centauri, the peacocks. The lore for Babylon 5 is that Peter Jurasik, I hope I'm getting his name right, the actor who played it, the funny guy, the New York guy, in a bunch of old stuff. It's like, you can find old clips of him on YouTube. I remember him from Growing Pains, actually. He was like a obnoxious editor. He made a joke when they were cutting the hair, because in Hollywood, they make wigs to any length so that you can trim them down. So when they were doing the hair, originally it was supposed to be kind of like a little up, almost like a inverted mullet, like a mullet, but a little up. And he had it all the way up like a peacock and asked JMS, the showrunner, what do you think? And he said, oh, it's fine. And then so they went ahead with that look, which is why, especially in season one, like just the hair of the Centauri, which is just humans with bad hair is what the Centauri species is from a look of it. We have learned in other episodes they have extra genitals, all sorts of funny stuff. But that's like their look and feel. And they all look ridiculous this episode with how their hair is done. But the females are bald, which is very interesting.
They're either bald or they have a ponytail in the back, as we learned in like the body dancer episode, like number three.
Yeah, that was the purple one. Londa was the bumbling buffoon ambassador, and we kind of start seeing something this episode. He is played by Vir Koto. I always mess up, but he is from Animal House. Stephen First, no longer with us, Flounder. Unfortunately. But Flounder, thank you. Fantastic person. The other... We've got two other main species. We have the Narn, the lizard-looking one. They show up this episode briefly. That's Jakar. I do got to ask this, Karen. I do think that's Andreas Katsoulis, so name near and dear to my heart. The one-armed man and the fugitive. I think he stole the scene this episode. He was only like two scenes, but I think he absolutely stole both.
No, I have to tell you, I was really distracted. You didn't mention him. Because he's only in this episode. The other Centauri that was there that was picking up the thing, Garrett Graham, he's a character actor, but he came on the screen and I was like, I know him. And Mike's like, no, you don't. And I was like, no, I do. And I went and I found him and he's from a Star Trek Voyager episode. He's a member of the Continuum with Q.
Yeah, he showed up in a bunch. He's like in like 90 some odd episodes. I have that in it. Garrett Graham, awesome. Although I will throw this out to you. Andreas Katsoulis does play a Romulan in some of the Star Trek movies too.
So. You put too much makeup on people and you can't tell. That's always fun too with Star Trek. Yeah. I went back and rewatched Next Generation a couple years ago. And like the cameos on that, they weren't big stars at the time, but like, after the fact, they're huge stars. It's just amazing, which I would love to watch Babylon 5 and just see if that kind of thing happens as well.
It's hit or miss. You know, we had like Winnie Cooper in an episode at one point, but this episode was more bit. Occasionally you get major names that are in everything. This episode, we have like character actors who have huge resumes as the guest stars. Very last one we're going to get to. We do have Natoth as Jakar's assistant. Doesn't show up in this episode. And spoiler alert, the makeup was really, really difficult for Narns. And some actors didn't want to deal with it. And so she may or may not show up in season two. Sorry for the spoilers if you were getting attacked.
Oh, we ended up talking a lot about Natoth last episode because she was the one who attacked the Deathwalker.
We were arguing about Mike's gerrymandered sucker punch, which I still do not forgive. And we will get back to that. All right. We are almost the actual episode. We have Kosh, the last of the major race. Karen, I got to know, actually. I'm sorry I keep asking, like, what's your opinion on this? Because it's like someone who didn't grow up with this. Like, Kosh is the Vorlon, who is this old alien race. He shows up in this supposed to be kind of majestic ship that I don't have words to describe how it looked. When
majestic
it
for the CGI they were doing at the time. It's shinier.
And he's this big alien in like a big, almost mech-looking suit that makes a weird noise. And we only see him for a little this episode. Karen, did you have any opinions on Kosh from just this episode or what you've seen so far?
I didn't, but now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, I'm very, very much reminded of the guys from Fifth Element. Isn't there like the alien?
Yes.
Max suits. He looks like that, like 100%. That's what I was like. I saw him and I was like, okay, what's going on? And then like, he was off screen and I was like, oh, and I forgot. But now we're sitting here talking, I'm like, oh, that's where I know him from. That's what he looks like them. Like I don't even remember what they are.
Me neither.
I think it's more about like his, just the silhouette of him, like where he's got like the big shoulders and the metal head. And that's, I think where that's coming in. But yeah.
Yeah. Like the turtles.
I wanted to know more about him.
Which is good. They are fascinating. Yeah. But season one takes some work. I'm just going to briefly run through these quick. Mike, and if we want to dive in a little more before I actually get to the episode, we got the Abai. I hope I'm getting the name right. They're fish looking. One of their leaders is Kalika, who kind of represents the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, just to give you the political underpinnings, which everybody needs for the show. We have the four major races, Earth, Mimbari, Narn, Centauri. We have the Vorlons, who are kind of a step up. They establish themselves in Deathwalker, where everybody's arguing, and then the Vorlons just show up and blow up a ship. and we learn nobody can do anything about it. So the Vorlons kind of exist outside of things and people are scared of them. And we learn this episode that the Vorlons and Shadows have animosity towards each other. So that's important. Then we have the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, who are players in space that aren't as powerful, that represent like one voting block collectively together. And essentially the way it works, as with most sci-fi shows, is just throw a bunch of people in different makeup together, most of them humanoid. There was some attempts in season one. One of the races was Kaskor. It kind of looked like a bug, like a beetle kind of insect thing, that was like an arms dealer on the station. They had like Jim Henson do some creature effects, but they eventually
it was cool, but he was only like in the background in like three episodes. Well, he was kind of like they put him in as a broker in certain things. Like they tried to establish him as anybody could go to the down below and get shady dealings through this like huge praying mantis Muppet, which was a cool idea. They just didn't figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, they moved on, and we kind of do end up in the world of humans and just funny prosthetics, ridges, alien looking. So like the Abai kind of look like fish. The Drazi kind of look kind of like turtley. The Narn, as we mentioned, look lizardy. One of my favorites, we've got, let's see, actually, let me get the name.
The Drazi just have that one episode with the purple versus the green sashes.
I love that. That shows
is
up.
One of the best.
The Brakiri don't show up in this episode, but I love because they're apparently methane breathers, and they're like in a weird looking breathing apparatus suit and have a Stephen Hawking device to talk with, which I like. We have the Merkab, don't get attached. We have the Antine, another humanoid with just, you know, like ridged features, but they're baby killers, as we learn. We have a race called the Pak Mara, who kind of look like squids. And we do learn through Show Don't Tell in the episode that
they're baby killers.
They're baby
killers. I didn't get to that yet. That you went over that pretty fast.
Okay.
They kill like any babies or just their own babies?
Just their own. We can
toddlers is like above the line. They can walk. You let them go. You know
Mike, we did not actually establish how many babies they are willing to kill. We only saw the one, and then they have never seen her.
And that's what we're here for, to really figure these things out, right, Trey?
I'm glad you stopped me for that, Mike.
No problem. You can continue with Pak Mara we're on.
Pak Mara are squid-like, and we do learn that they like are carrion eaters. So there are a few episodes where they bring up, they're like, we lost the evidence and we're going to go ask the Pak Mara and make sure they didn't eat it. So there is some fun of like trying to make different alien species, try and make this a more wild world. But we do end up in the Star Trek world of bunch of people, bipeds that just have funny prosthetic makeup, because that's kind of what you've got to do, especially if you're ever going to have guest actors.
Speaking of the prosthetic, the one thing that I love seeing was with the scenes where Londo and was it Tarkin or the other Lord were next to each other, and Londo clearly, because he's a regular, they have his regular hair all up, and the other guy just clearly just had kind of like something they put over his regular hair to make the Centauri hair go up. Oh, it was pretty funny.
That was Lord Kiro.
Lord Kiro, yes.
And that's a wrap for this week. I think we're still in the clear. Dre never checks the feed and is still completely in the dark on these mini-sodes. Let's keep it that way. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next Sunday with the Babylon 5 Season 1 Finale, Chrysalis, with special guest Evan Stitely. Cheers, all.